Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the TF Podcast, where we discuss technology, finance, and business. This time, we're going to be talking some things with banking and cryptocurrency, and I'm really excited to welcome my guest, Scott Purcell. He is the CEO of Prime Trust, and with that, Scott, I'd love if you could introduce yourself to everybody.
Thanks. Happy to be here. I'm Scott Purcell, CEO and founder of Prime Trust. Really the provider of open banking and financial infrastructure for fintech innovators, and especially embracing the blockchain community.
Yeah, love it. I love you kind of even break that down for us, because my guess is that maybe a lot of consumers might not be familiar with Prime Trust, but I know that a lot of technologists definitely are, right? Because I've even reached out to you in the past about, you know, how to collaborate there. So could you touch on like where Prime Trust sits in the market overall?
Yeah, consumers wouldn't generally know us. They might if they read the fine print, but they certainly would know our customers like Binance and Start Engine and OKCoin and many others. We provide a variety of financial infrastructure to people across the spectrum, and that includes anti-money laundering checks, know your customer checks, specialized escrow services for securities, as well as transactions. We provide settlement infrastructure we call PrimeX for 24/7 settlements between counterparties, which is very popular with a lot of cryptocurrency exchanges and OTC desks in particular, and the upcoming emergence of alternative trading systems, which will be creating secondary markets for private securities, real estate interests, and other things. And funds processing, custodial accounts, IRAs, and a suite of pick and choose, a buffet of financial infrastructure items that businesses can choose from as they build their mobile apps or their fintech businesses to present to consumers.
Yeah, and my guess is that probably has a lot to do with, you know, Prime Trust probably has some level of specialty, also regulations, and like the legal aspect that frankly become probably pretty difficult for a startup or a company to, you know, venture in if it's just an aspect of their business as opposed to like the whole business, right?
Right. Well, every fintech business needs a financial institution at its foundation, right? And that's what Prime Trust is. Prime Trust operates as a trust company instead of a bank, and we're both overseen and chartered by the banking commissioner, but the difference is a trust company can handle a lot of different assets, not just cash, and a trust company is protected with, or is charged with protecting assets. It's not permitted to do stupid things with people's money like a bank is, which, you know, a bank can make loans, which we don't do. So. Yeah. For us as a trust company, it's all about providing infrastructure in a way that's safe and sound, and enables us to be that trusted financial institution to provide a lot of different financial infrastructure to our customers.
Yeah, yeah. And how long has Prime Trust been around?
We were formed in April of 2016 and received our trust charter in January of 2017.
Got it. And when you started, were you focused on the crypto side of things more versus traditional banking, or vice versa?
We were providing a lot of services to the crowdfunding world, which we still do.
Oh, got it.
We're the escrow agent, funds processing. We provide a boatload of technology for compliance, for transaction processing, for specialty account services and things. And that was the big part of what we did. We were also providing some specialty accounts like college savings accounts and IRAs and things. But we're building a tremendous amount of automation so all of these people that were our customers could leverage our financial infrastructure. And then we started to receive calls from different people in the crypto world saying, hey, we need that financial infrastructure for our business. Can you know, can Prime Trust provide services to us? And we looked at it and said, sure. And we started to embrace it. And, you know, one of the things was, of course, we handle, you know, billions of dollars in cash transactions and, you know, millions. We did in last quarter, we did 1.4 million anti-money laundering checks for people. So, and we did $2 billion in transaction settlements on our PrimeX system. So it's growing like crazy. But one of the things that we had to do is people said, well, can you hold Bitcoin for us? Even though a lot of our exchanges like Binance and OKCoin and Bittrex and others, they hold it themselves. They don't want us to do it, but we do have some people that want us to hold digital assets. So we looked at it and we said, well, okay, we hold cash, dollars, euros, pounds, sterling. We hold private securities, public securities, real estate interests. So we just have to put together the custodial infrastructure for holding digital assets. It's not rocket science. So we put that together and rolled it out.
Yeah, I mean, my guess would be is that just kind of like exactly what you just said there is that the infrastructure is rather similar. It's just maybe like the behavior is slightly different.
Yeah, it's really the access points, how people get to it. I mean, we have to operate per, you know, the banking commissioner's directives of how a financial institution operates safe and sound and all these things. So when we put together that cold storage, hot storage, our hot wallets solutions, doing it in a way that's secure was paramount. And that took us about 8 months of work. And then we went through, got board approval, and eventually rolled it out as a serial product.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, so tracking back a little bit further then, how did you get into this space to begin with? Do you have like a background in banking, or what were you doing, I guess, before Prime Trust?
Well, my background, I started my career in the securities industry, trading fixed income for institutions. I started my own brokerage firm. I then started a trust company and built that trust company up to a pretty good size, primarily servicing broker dealers and their institutional customers, and then sold that business to a bank. And then I ran the trust department, which was very big for Commerce Bank Group. And I was sometime later, I then read an article about a kid. This was 95, 94, and I read a kid named Mark Andreessen at the University of Illinois had written a graphical window on this internet thing. And I'm like, oh my God, that's the future of communications. I don't really know what it is, but I have to do this.
Yeah.
And I went on to raise about $100 million in venture capital and built one of the very first commercial internet service providers.
Oh, wow.
So jump forward, you know, after the dot-com meltdown, I basically was in a state of semi-retirement for a while. And I read about, in November of 2011, the Entrepreneurs Access to Capital Act in the House of Representatives had become the Jobs Act when it reached the Senate. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to let people use the internet. This could change capital markets. I mean, you're going to let retail investors, institutional investors use general solicitation and things that had never been done, at least not since the 33 Act. And I said, it's securities, it's banking, it's trust, it's internet technology, it's all the things I know. And so I put together a company called Fund America, and Fund America provided escrow services, funds processing, compliance, transaction technology, and other kinds of specialized services on a B2B basis for the crowdfunding industry. And we're pretty successful with that. So that's how I got my start, and that's my background. Then leveraged all that into Prime Trust.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's a great story in itself. Back and forth. And then now you're still on the innovative side of things, working with the cryptocurrencies as well, in addition to, you know, to both. That's great. When you think about, I guess, where how Prime Trust evolves, or just kind of how like the financial markets evolve when it comes to you know, how an institution operates with fintechs. Like, how has that evolved, I guess, since you've started in this space? I remember reading an article one day where they're saying that, you know, hey, banks fear FANG the most, you know, your Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, et cetera, because of the fact that like they can even become banking institutions. So I'd love just kind of your outlook on just how you've seen fintech and just really just a little bit what you were touching a moment ago of how finance has just evolved as a result of not only the rules changing or, you know, being more amendable to individuals, but then also like the technology catching up with that as well.
Well, it's been evolutionary, of course. When I started my internet company, I would go meet with people. Like I'd meet with a large law firm, like a giant law firm, and be pitching them that they need internet for their law firm and email and things. And they would shake their heads and they would pat me on the shoulder.
And they would so say, crazy to think about.
Understand, this firm will never have an internet connection and no lawyer will ever use email because it's too insecure. And I just shake my head and go, yeah, you will. You just don't know it yet. And you jump forward.
Great conversation.
Those are real conversations that I had.
Yeah.
And then you go forward and it's like, well, no bank will ever let you access your account with the internet. That'll never happen. And of course it did. NetBank was started and other banks were started. And then, you know, as far as Merrill Lynch and others were concerned, you would never use the internet to access your brokerage account or to trade stocks. Oh my God, that'll never happen. So the disruption was set for the innovators like E-Trade and others that came along. And now more recently, of course, Robinhood knocking the cover off the ball. So you have the same progression with banking. You've had them begrudgingly allow people to use the internet. And now you have a host of disruptive mobile apps starting, you know, PayPal really kicked it off and then Venmo and now Cash App with Square. We have a mobile app that is rolling out next month, mobile payments app called Bank, B-A-N-Q. And it's really disrupted the space because the innovators do what the old guard won't. And then The old guard often begrudgingly buys that, you know, that group. And so even though the United States is behind, say, Europe, where they have the open banking mandates and the rails, there's still a lot happening in the US, like you've seen with Plaid and Finicity and others on an infrastructure level, making it easier for people to connect into and share banking rails and information.
Yeah.
Long-winded.
I'm fascinated by it, to be honest. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in payments, but just tangentially. So my background is in commerce and retail. And so that's been my look on it. And so it's for me, it's just fascinating to kind of see it like what you're talking about from the banking lens. And, you know, like you just mentioned Plaid, for example, and these fintechs that have found, like what you just said, you know, grabbing spaces where the large incumbents wouldn't take and then building entire businesses out of it. You know, like Plaid just sold to Visa. I can't remember what the
$5 billion.
$5 billion?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and Plaid is, you know, people don't realize Plaid's, you know, the backbone to almost every, you know, fintech app from not every, but like it's a in that connection phase, right? And so it's pretty interesting.
Well, Plaid's a good example because if we require our customers to use Plaid for if they're linking one of their customers' bank account to a prime trust account, so the Plaid is that middleware. So we rely on them to validate a person's bank account and a balance that they have in their account if they're buying something. But Plaid doesn't actually move money. Plaid doesn't enable the ACH or create a notcha file and move money from one bank to another. We do that, or another bank will do that, or a money transmitter or whatever. So, but Plaid is that good financial middle infrastructure to create a trusted environment for us to execute that business.
Yeah.
It was something the blockchain is disrupting.
Right. Definitely. And so you're kind of moving in that vein. So recently this week, actually, it was just announced that banks are going to be able to custody crypto and so forth. And, you know, just curious, like, what your thoughts are there overall. Obviously, you've specifically been in, you know, with your company since 2016. So I'm sure you've seen, you know, the anti-bank, or sorry, the bank anti-crypto aspects for a really long time, and that slowly has eased up. You know, what are just, I guess, your overall thoughts on that? Is that a good or a bad thing? What's your point of view there?
Well, I think it's terrific. It's really a good thing. The there's still a lot that has to be ironed out. First of all, that's from the OCC, mm-hmm. so it only applies to nationally chartered banks.
Got it.
Most are state chartered banks, so it doesn't necessarily apply to them. So for the banks it does apply to, then how are they going to do it? And just because the OCC says that works okay, it doesn't mean the Federal Reserve or the FDIC are going to immediately jump up and embrace it, because they're going to view banks involved in cryptocurrency to be probably high risk. But it depends on what the banks are doing. If they're doing prop trading, it is high risk. If they're holding custody, then it depends on how well they've ironed that out. And I think that most banks are probably going to align themselves with a regulated, qualified custodian, such as Prime Trust, and there are a handful of others, and partner with them to use their storage facilities, maybe in an omnibus level or capacity, or in a segregated way. But the banks have to figure out what they're going to do with it and why. So if you're a national bank, are your customers asking you for cryptocurrency? If they are, what are they asking you to do with it? Are they asking just to buy it and hold it? Are they asking to buy it so then they can send it internationally, which could then present a whole, open a whole can of worms with the AML and KYC? Are they using it to liquidate? Do they just want to, they own some, they want to bring it to the bank, have it held there, maybe liquidate it so they have cash? The banks have to understand why they want to hold Bitcoin or other digital assets, what they want to do with it, not just how. And so companies like ours can solve the how, and we can a lot of the things that they want to do with it, whether it's be a liquidity provider or whatever, or our customers, our OTC desk customers and exchange customers can. But for the bank, they got to really come to an understanding of why they want to do it, and then how and what services they're going to offer. And it'll take them a little while, but sure. But overall, it's a good thing. Banks should be able, cryptocurrency has been designated as a currency, and banks hold currencies, so it's a natural thing for them to do.
Yeah.
But then their core systems, if they're using Fiserv or FIS or Jack Henry or whatever, how are they going to hold in an account? Those core processors aren't ready for this either. So there's a lot to work out.
Right. Like you're saying that, right? You know, a lot of people don't realize that the core banking technology infrastructure is very old, very, very old, right?
Really old, very antiquated.
Like even before the internet, right? Like a lot of it. And so you have this, to build on top of that is probably not very likely, of course. And then, it makes total sense why they would, partner with, say, someone like yourself to make that happen. And so when you, when you see that overall, and you think about these banks, not just in necessarily in the crypto sense, but, do you see a world where banks start selling cryptocurrency as well? Like, so not just being the custodian of it, someone, bringing their deposits in, but also, selling it to their members or their account holders and so forth.
I think that some banks will. I think some banks won't. It really depends on how they view cryptocurrency. I'm on a lot of, mailing lists. I get a lot of publications. Some banks view cryptocurrency as an asset class, like Bitcoin and ETH and Litecoin and Ripple and whatever. Others view it as, you know, tulip bulbs. So yeah. Something that doesn't have any backing. So for a bank, if they believe it is an asset class that customers can legitimately buy and hold and use, then they will participate in this. Others, I think, are going to be afraid that if there's a collapse in this market, then they're going to get sued if they've sold it to people. And they're right about that, if that were to happen. So it really depends on where you fall in the belief spectrum of this being a really good asset class or just being afraid of it. And there are bankers on the entire scale. Yeah. So some will, some won't.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, moving along to just what's been happening in like things like the stock market, and you know, most people are going to be listening to my show are fairly aware of what's happening in the stock market as far as like it's been, you know, rather bullish. I'm curious if there's any insight you could give us just more on the lines of like, you know, what does volume look like, or how is it like, even from like a banking tech perspective, is like how has the system been taxed, or how is this able to kind of continue even just from an infrastructure standpoint? And then even outside of that, just I'd love your opinions on just what's happening,
you know, stock market, or you mean with cryptocurrency?
Oh, sorry. The stock market, right? Like the stock market's been super wild and crazy. And, you know, I'm just curious, I'm sure you probably have some thoughts or insights into that. And just kind of curious what your opinions are would be on that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of far more educated and smarter people than me.
I'm not asking for stock predictions, no worries. I just mean more like, you know, it seems like the system's getting taxed quite a bit, right? And so I'd just be curious how, you know, even from, you know, money coming into the system, or, you know, because you see these articles every day about how there's more retail investors and...
I don't know, just on a macro level, for me, we have 30% of the publicly traded companies today that we did in 2001. So there are fewer companies for people to invest in today than there were 20 years ago. Hmm. You have an expanding economy, an expanding base, so you have more money coming in, chasing fewer opportunities to invest. So that would inflate prices no matter what. I think with the advent of ATSs and trading private securities and real estate interests in the future, I think it democratizes the playing field so small companies can get liquidity again, because you know the regulations, Sarbanes-Oxley and others, have locked small companies out of the capital markets, changes. And I think that it probably has an effect on the overall market. But so on one hand, you have more and more money, population growing, GDP growing, chasing fewer available investments in the public markets. On the other hand, you know, we're in one of the scariest times of history right now.
Yeah.
So how do stocks keep going up? At some point, there has to be a cycle that goes down. All I can say is at Prime Trust, when we went into this, I tightened my belt, let some people go, froze hiring, and got ready to weather the storm. And instead, we've been rocketing. The growth is exponential and breathtaking, and I can't fully explain it. It just is.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. This would be definitely interesting to see how, you know, that keeps going up. You know who, what's his name? The Barstool president guy, what's his name? Dave Portney. He always says stocks go up. that's like his thing. He's like, stocks just go up.
Yeah, well, long term he's right, but they do have periods where they go down significantly at times. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What are some, when you're thinking about how you build out future products for Prime Trust, obviously I'm assuming you make the same decisions that any entrepreneur does. And that's when you start getting like that market demand or market questionings or things mm-hmm. like that. But what are some things on the horizon that, I don't know, that you're bullish about from a tech perspective, or that you think will kind of start to drive just overall innovation in fintech or things that, you know, Prime Trust might be working on that you're able to share?
I'm very bullish about the secondary trading of private securities and real estate interests, both tokenized and not tokenized. I believe that's the future of capital markets, and it's going to start happening.
Is that like the fractional real estate or whatever? Is that what that means?
That's part of it, but no. If you let's say you buy into a property, you buy into an apartment building with a group of people. So you own an interest in that apartment building, and later you need to get out of it because whatever, your things in your life change and you would like to sell your interest in that. Well, how do you do that? You know, right now you have to go make phone calls and network and hope you can find a friend or somebody that's interested in owning that part of the apartment building you've got. In the future, there will be ATSs that look a lot like, you know, OTC or NASDAQ or whatever. Has the same look and feel where you'll be able to go list that, and where buyers, because they'll be bringing in buyers, where buyers will come and go, yeah, I'll buy that. So it'll be a very active way to trade interests and things which are not DTC eligible, listed on a public securities exchange, SEC reporting, et cetera, et cetera. And that's true not just for real estate, it's true for private securities. You know, maybe you bought into a startup. Maybe you own some shares in Airbnb. Well, Airbnb is not on NASDAQ. They're not on New York Stock Exchange. So if you own some shares in that because you got them as part of your employee package or you were an early investor, how do you sell them? There will be a way to do that that'll look a lot like NASDAQ, and it'll work very, very cool. So, and I'm just picking on Airbnb. I mean, lots of small companies that are entrepreneurial in nature, like your company, right? What if somebody owns shares in your company? You're not public.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you know, for people for different reasons might want to exactly like make their shares available, you know, and so forth. So that makes a ton of sense. Is that something that Prime Trust is thinking about supporting, that type of action?
Oh, big time. We are supporting it. We have, I don't know, a couple dozen ATS customers right now in various stages of their regulatory submissions with the SEC. Some have gotten approval, some are still working through it. And we will be supporting their efforts because the clearing infrastructure, the settlement infrastructure of the public markets does not work for private securities. You can't DTC eligibility, NSCC, National Securities Clearing Corp, transfer agents, ACATS, the entire plumbing for settling shares of Apple or shares of Amazon between counterparties, between say E-Trade and Merrill Lynch, just doesn't work. And so the existing players there, like, you know, Pershing and Apex and Clearing Corp and whatever, they really can't do this business. The regulations are way too high friction for them. The volume is too low. So it falls to a company like Prime Trust for us to provide that settlement infrastructure for customers who want to buy and sell private securities and real estate interests with each other. So we're very, very active in this. Nice. Even though right now it's just costing money. This isn't going to be real for a couple of years. It won't be significant for a couple of years. It's trickling now, but a couple of years from now, this is going to be a monster market, and we're positioning Prime Trust to be the foundation for it.
And what do you think it's taking for that to become a monster market? Is it just time, like just time and awareness, or the tools need to be kind of set up for it, or just the way people think? What is it?
It's, well, there's some marketing, but it's more infrastructure. It's the ATS is working with us. It's us making sure that the things we're doing are in alignment with SEC rules and securities regulations, and as well as, of course, you know, trust and banking regulations. And so we're doing this in a way that's supported. But the thing that'll really drive adoption is, you know, again, if you're trying to sell your shares in that apartment building and somebody is coming and you list them on an ATS and somebody comes and buys it, they're going to want to see the history on that. They're going to want to see the original offering docs. They're going to want to see the history of the payments that have been made. Has the group with the apartment building been paying the rents on time? Have you been receiving that? Have there been any foreclosures, or have there been any issues? So this data needs to exist, and that's a long way from that. Same thing if you listed your company on this, your shares of it, one of your employees perhaps list some shares, or one of your earlier investors, and they're going to want to see, okay, we got to see something about the company. We want to see current financials on them. We want to see the original offering docs. We want to know how big they are. And so the ATSs are going to need to do similar to if you go to NASDAQ, or if you're on Robinhood and you click on a stock, you're like, oh, maybe I'll invest in this. And you click on it, their screen will bring up all kinds of information. So you can make an informed decision about that investment, about whether to buy that secondary trade of a security. And that needs to happen for private securities as well. And that's just going to take a couple of years to build.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Scott, I really enjoyed this conversation. One question I like to ask all my guests at the end is, what is a question that you have that you'd like to ask our audience, something that they can think about as they go about their day, as they're listening to this?
I guess, really, what do people feel about the future of information sharing and the ability, and this is one of the promises of blockchain when it comes to information and portability, is how comfortable are you with information being public so that you can sell or buy securities, so that you can share your health records with doctors and others, versus the risk of that being hacked or being made available to somebody. So this new future that we're looking at of increased health benefits, increased on you know, accounting and financial transparency and investing in securities and currency and banking, all depends upon the sharing, not just of like money, but the sharing of your personal information and locking that down and controlling it. So how do you feel about that? What do you think it takes for you to be comfortable to do that?
It's a great question. Yeah, I don't even know you. I'm going to be thinking about that one. Well, Scott, what are some good ways that people can either get in touch with you or follow you or pay attention to what's going on with Prime Trust?
The best way to follow me is just to go to primetrust.com and sign up for my blog, which I do not as frequently as I used to, just because of the time demands right now.
Yeah.
But that's really the best way to do it. And if you have a business and you need financial infrastructure in order to get launched and grow and to do some amazing things, then please consider Prime Trust to be your partner in that, and come in and contact us, and one of my business development people will be happy to show you how things work.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us, Scott.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Everybody, thank you for listening to another episode of the TF Podcast. Please make sure that you are liked and subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. Do us a favor and fill in those stars. It goes a long way. You can follow me at JG Product on Twitter and TF Labs at TF Labs _. And then find out more about what we're doing at tflabs.io. Thanks so much, and we'll see y'all soon.